Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Sober Indians Wednesday Night Live. I'm Karen, your host, and tonight we have James. So we're going to be speaking about his journey to recovery and a few other things that he wanted to talk about. So welcome to the show, James.
Hello. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. How are you?
All right. There's a lot of things you can touch on, but I tell you, younger people, your journey to recovery, your spiritual recovery is a lot of struggles, a lot of heartaches, whatever addictions we may have, drinking and IV drug use, whatever kind of drugs or gambling, we might switch addictions, things like that, and supplement. But, we're big supporter on the 12-step programs. A lot of them are cultural-based nowadays. And they're also, they're designed to help us out if we reach out or have good friends that are able to get us to them in time.
All right. I was going to ask you real quick, so we're talking about addiction and recovery. What brought you to where you are now? Because I know that there were some things there that now you're on the road to recovery and have been for quite some time.
Quite some time. The story is talking to one of my sponsors. I talked to a few of my sponsors today and made a light of things and vented and talked and got real about certain issues. But like anybody's story, my last sponsor is one of the first sponsors I had in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people just think that because they're younger, they don't know stuff, but yet they're still on a journey of their recovery, whether they call it the red road, or the sobriety. And they don't turn you away. They still come pick you up and try to get you to do things, whether it's culture-orientated. And he said, I can't. He was texting. He said, I can't tell you nothing. It's your story.
Mm.
And I said, like many other people, not only in Indian country, but, my story started when I was 9 years old. When you took a first drink, and we make light of it when you grow older, but, our first drink is, with our relatives. It's just a part of a set pattern. We learn behavior is a big word, say, that we learn through the programs. And I criticize and stuff, too. Say, some of them words I don't know how to spell, so I try to keep it to simple layman terms where we can learn, understand a better understanding.
Right.
And they all display the same characteristics. We could, a few years ago, 2000, someone started making stuff using pipestone.
Mm-hmm.
One of my sisters says, they're just switching addictions.
Oh.
And I said, yeah, of course, it's a positive addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I could go. Go to in town and sit there all day and push a button and watch little things go down all day long too. So I chose to do this. And it's making spiritual items. Some people beadwork, and some people make dream catchers. Some people do arts and crafts. Not only Indian people, it's just to keep your mind busy doing something positive with their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up in nowadays, like I was talking to my other sponsors, I said, that big word, the historical trauma. And I said, that's a big word, which leaves it wide open to not only now, but the last 100 years, up to today, maybe 150 years, that we're still working through. And now I was listening to the news today and listening to what the new president has to say and the things, the positive things they want to make, within our country as a whole. And that's what it's going to take, is everybody working together. You know, like they're on the same page, and my first drink was at 9 years old, and when you realize you have your first drink, whether it was with a relative, mother, auntie, cousin, mother, father, and you have a blackout, you should, you know, even at that age, we don't know. We already know we have a problem. Mm-hmm. But we didn't know at that age. But yet, maybe it was something in our DNA, as they have big words for it. And
did it start kind of like just a curiosity? Is that what happened? Because now it's awful young.
Yes, it is. And I'm not, you know, it's just one of many stories on any. I've had a chance to talk to a lot of people in different places, and it's the same stories, different people telling them at young ages. Of where they experiment with either alcohol or smoking weed, marijuana, on a experimental basis. And then you get all this new studies that say, well, maybe it was inherited, something passed on down. And all the new studies that they, you know, come out in the 80s, late 80s, and on up to today, you know, that it's, and I tell the young people, well, it's, we're all responsible for that. You know, I don't mean to shame anybody by saying what I'm saying, but it's all proven. It's been said. Nothing I've said, going to say now, hasn't been said before. And now they have the studies, anything you put in your body 2 years before conception, you know, contributes to what that unborn child, and they have no say in that. Things and stuff like that, and it's takes generations to do that and undo.
Yeah.
And the programs, the chemical dependency field, the mental health programs.
Mm-hmm.
When you get on the same page and work together with the people, the residents, the clients that they offer a service to, then they call us successes. And it sounds kind of like, well, still like a technical term. Or nobody really wants to be a case study, but that's how we learn, by our mistakes. And I think at age 9, I started experimenting with that. Then I left it alone for a while. Then he said, you get access, you find out, yeah, that made you feel pretty good. Made you feel different. A little alcohol, so you started sneaking it, taking it from wherever you could get it, you know. Taking a beer here, taking a beer there, and shuffling in a... I just happened to grow up in foster homes. So, anyway, in that experiment, we think back, and we like that feeling. We like that euphoric feeling that makes you feel better than what we really had in life at the time. But as we live through it, it ain't no joke. You know, we can laugh and joke about it when you get older, but when we live through it, being broken home, it's all the dysfunction. And, you know, at the later age, you didn't get around to being the in crowd. When you get in high school and stuff, you want to be in the in crowd. Be in the cool crowd, they used to say. And cool crowd like to smoke weed and run around, skip school and stuff like that. You miss out on a lot of life. And at the age of almost 60, I look back and missed out a lot of life. I got in a lot of places that I shouldn't have got myself into. And some people say this or that. I said, it's no excuse. And some people is kind of strict and say alcohol and drug abuse is no excuse.
Mm-hmm.
You can't use that as an excuse because it's still in our behaviors. It's your behavior. You still had a choice not to use are this, and here are our elders, spiritual elders. Mm-hmm. They say, well, say if you put a beer in front of you or a can or whatever you're using, did I pick that up for you? Did I put that to your mouth? No, you did that. And it's a hard way to look at things. And people that know me for the last 10 years, I said, well, I haven't stuck a needle in my arm since 2002. So that's progress on that part. And but it's young people, you see, no, you don't know what you're talking about. I said, well, that's what I thought about all them old-timers, too. They don't know what they're talking about. But yet somehow they achieved some sobriety. Somehow they were able to take care of their families, hold a job, have nice cars, nice home. And then you figure out, how did they do that? And majority of them, in the last 7 years, and I said, this is something that just didn't happen. I said, so when I asked to do this, I said, he said, how long you been clean and sober? I said, well, since May 5th, 2020. The time before that was 5 years. The time before that was 8.5 years, you know, and the time before that, maybe 2 years. So it's a lifelong process. Well, without the help of these programs, that the people, they, you know, they reach out and, you know, they say you had enough. Maybe we think you had enough. You're going to come to a point where your body's going to start giving out. Then we hear about it in the news, in the communities. How many people we got to put at funeral services for? And that's kind of rough on everybody in the families. Mm-hmm. For the suicides, for the ODs. Because listen to old timers, and they say, well, the alcohol takes your spirit away. Anything will take your spirit away.
Mm-hmm.
Then your personal spirit. And I said, your spirit don't want to be there. Your spirit don't want to be in all that chemical abuse or whatever addiction you're in.
Mm-hmm.
So it leaves you. Sometimes it don't come back. And a lot of us get ourselves into correctional facilities, and that puts up more hurdles because of our criminal histories. It's going to put barriers on us getting jobs. You have to wait longer to get a might not get a job, $20 an hour job. They're going to have to settle for a $6 an hour job,
mm-hmm.
and go from there.
Right, because technically, in a sense, you know, if you go into the prison system,
yep.
Normally you have a felony charge when you go in.
Yeah,
so
that's what I tell these people. You know, my name is James White, and I said my criminal history is an open book,
mm-hmm.
and they've opened it and looked what I had, and I said, yep, that's the way I was. So there's no secrets. Everything they used to call it in the late 80s. 85, 86, they say, that's the big computer in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And now they just got more technical terms for them. Keeps track of everything.
Right. And you know, they give a lot of programs inside the system, too. But
yes.
Ultimately, yes. You're not really prepared for coming out if you're in for a long length of time, either. So you get the program, and then you get X amount of weeks to be reiterated into the public, and sometimes it's too fast.
Yeah, or I've been in every facility in the United States.
Oh, wow.
I've been to just about every type of program designed,
mm-hmm.
one time or another, and did a lot of things I'm not proud of. But I was down in Leavenworth, so down in Kansas. I just tell the people, I went away to Kansas for a while, you know. And I said, they had a self-help program there. It was one for the archives, they said, when I got out. was a Life Connections program. It was a faith-based program where they had maybe 150 men living on the same unit, every faith in the world, Christians, you know, Buddhists. He even had an atheist in there, but he still believed in something.
Mm-hmm.
And they all lived together, went to work together, got along, had communication, and had peace within that unit.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to sit down and talk about things and share. And it takes a lifetime to take away the skin color and say they're just another human being. A big got out, and they had a Don Sequoias, his elder's meditation.
Mm-hmm.
He come in there for a week. So it wasn't just, an hour here or hour there. For every aspect there was, everything from physical abuse, sexual abuse, chemical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
They come in and did a whole week on it. So we got 40 hours. It was kind of a more intense, plus we each got their own faith-based part of the program to go to. And I chose to, still go to Sweat Lodge and learn more about the Christianity part, learn a little bit about the Muslims that were in that program, the Christians, mm-hmm. the other brothers. We learned how to put a brother on there and we have to take them barriers off, and we get to team up and talk with somebody, get to know them, ask them how, this and that. And there was some guy from Detroit, a gentleman.
Mm.
He looked at me. He had to sit there 2 feet apart. He said, I'm black. I said, well, yeah. But I said, I thought you were just a Christian brother. I said, I didn't, look at you. I'm not looking at you that you're a Christian brother. I'm just looking at your brother. I didn't ask you what your colors were, what you did before you sat down here.
Mm.
And if we can set that aside, then you can make a new friend. And even though we might never see him again in our whole lives, but you still made a friend sitting 2 feet away. Without the racial tensions that goes on everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd like to paint a pretty picture, but it's not always that way, because there's always going to be conflict, even in every community. Whether I'm sitting down in Alabama right now, it's right here, it's in a small town in Cass Lake, Minnesota, wherever you go. It's all the way out in California. It's in every community there is.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, they still have, everybody's still going to protest, that's it, and they're going to have, I said, hopefully they're going to be, from this point on, hopefully they'll be peaceful protesters.
Right.
Instead of the violent ones, but they do. But yet, I said, the old movements, they called them, for our culture alone, they had the AIM movement. And I said, all of them, we used to just, well, it's just a Hollywood Indian. Because you got to be in movies and stuff. Before that, there's Rosa Parks down here. There's Martin Luther King. They each were activists and protesters of their own.
Yeah.
For civil rights. And civil rights for 100 years ago. And so, we get into that part, and it's, people are going to be protesting, and they need it. Some causes are good.
Mm-hmm.
Without them protesters, even way back when, for Native Americans alone, mm-hmm. On the Freedom of Religious Act come in 1975, when it says, I joke around with the older men, I said, it's okay now. You ain't got to hide your sweat lodge in the back of your house. You can have it in your front yard.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. And I said, every nationality, religion, has gone through the same criticism, same
exactly.
Slavery.
I had a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to change the subject, but I was wondering, when you were going through your journey to recovery and everything, what was the one thing that helped you to stay focused getting there or staying on track to being sober?
Finding a spiritual, I just call it a spiritual part of the program.
Mm-hmm.
Something I relate to.
Mm-hmm.
Because I grew older now. And I said, well, our grandfathers were subject to the boarding school era. And I said, well, I wasn't too far off then. We were put in the foster home. Something to that. So you had to knuckle under their rules and stuff that you were in their home. So that's what was, you needed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But we already know we're a culture, our beliefs, and there's still something. I just call it a spiritual awakening from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Some people still choose to go to church. Some people still choose to carry a pipe. Some people still choose to carry a Corona. No, we're all able to do that. We'll see if it's dead without being too much. Right. But the rest of the community around it. One brother, he said, he's been with the 17 teams. So that was a good one. But, I came up from up north. Not many people would understand what I would say. He means, I'm not sure. So the kids nowadays are more fluent than I am. Because I got schools and I go.
Mm.
And you could talk about the language more. And open it in 15. So I was here in the stocking. Other tribes and nations talk on YouTube and stuff. So you get around people that know a little bit. Most people know more language than me. So I'd say, Kichimakwa, Indiscos. It's good day, DCD, his game. Anyway, I hear him translating. If I say a longer prayer that I know, people that don't know it, I said, it doesn't matter if we speak Indian or not. The spirits, our grandfathers, our ancestors, they're still going to understand us.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, and one of my Indian names is Big Bear. That's Ichimokwa. And it's good day, the DCD is good game. And I found out when I was from the Buffalo Clan.
Mm-hmm.
Since my mom was from Minnesota, my dad come from White Earth, which is 50, 60, 70 miles away, hour and a half away from there. Back in the day, younger people, they said back in the day. Well, back in the day, probably in their days was probably early 1900s. When they were taking people from Red Lake, Turtle Mountain, moving them all over to different reservations, relocating them. Similar to Trail of Tears, it was publicized. Similar to that. Take them away from over there, to my dad's people, his grandfather's, or I'd come as far as Turtle Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a long ways from the Panama Band, Turtle Mountain, upper Chippewa Cree. So that was a long ways to get uprooted and brought to White Earth in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how we come about. And then he says, some people are still be proud of our heritage, your culture. Some people stay, they're still pagans. And I laugh at that now because different terminologies is, it's still a belief. They still believe in a one creator. They just have different ways to practice it.
Right.
And I said, the Dakotas, since they come from that descent too, and also Anishinaabe. Anishinaabe, it's pronounced Anishinaabe, but then you go to another person there, they pronounce Anishinaabe, they put a another abbreviation because it comes from farther up north. And that just means the first people that either migrated or started out in Canada, migrated away down here. And that's why I call it migrate and move. Had to go where the best hunting was. And I'm figuring out, way back, way before our time, the very 1400s and stuff like maybe before that.
Right.
That's just a little brief summary. Now I used to go to school for it. Every book of history, there's always a book. And my dad was, I come from an alcoholic family. Alcoholic behaviors. So, and I told this one brother today, I said, well, I'd like to remember my dad for the last 17.5 years of his life that he dedicated to a program. And I was working at a facility probably in the 70s, 80s. It had to help people. Mm-hmm. Other people with drinking problems. And new drugs. Sit around and listen around. Even this old man, he's come around to prisons, even 83, 85. And he sit around and talk about the future. Tell about things that are going to happen. Because that's how we always know. We listen to them on YouTube. You can punch up everything you want to listen on YouTube. Jimmy Jackson Sr. He was still, he didn't need to come around every week after week. But then here's another man that dedicated his life to do that for 50 years, 50 years of his life. And there's every nationality and race, there's people that don't have to do these things, but yet they do them. They don't get paid. Some people don't get paid for them, but they're still going to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And,
can I ask you about the Silver Indian support group and what it means to you and how it helps you be in there? I was asking about the online group Silver Indians and what it means to you as a whole and how it's kept you focused.
The online groups is nowadays you got them Zoom meetings. You get Zoom meetings, you just have to punch them numbers in there. It's just like now they have all the social distancing.
Mm-hmm.
You can hook up with people you might be sitting in Minnesota and there'll be people way down Arizona. Not only Indians, there'll be non-Indians get in there and want to participate.
Mm-hmm.
And choose a way to believe. I just say, nowadays you learn, sit around, listen to our elders. And I say elders, at my age of almost 60, some younger guys look like, you're an elder too. Just because you're younger, I'm never going to know it all. I said, you know more than I do in some areas because you've had other teachings. You've got your own story and the people you learned from. I just call it incorporate into our personal program.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I run into the same thing when I was younger. What's way to believe? You know?
Right.
You got to believe in the other book of history. You got to study that because that's the only way to believe. But yet we grow older and find out even that book of history, it was written 2,000 years ago, maybe more. And I can talk that way because when I was sitting in, when I was away in Kansas, I took a 2-year course on studying the book of history. And I did another presentation one time and I said, what book are you referring to? And the lady, I met her again. She just looked white because she had light skin. She said, what book are you referring to? Is he referring to the Bible? I said, yes, I am, ma'am. That's a good book to read. Guidelines to live by. We've got to get into technicals. I said, even them spiritual people way back when, they didn't just write that book down. Somebody guided them to write it down on paper and translate it 5, 6, 7 times into English, all the way from Hebrew to Latin, so we can understand it better today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even a Native American religion, they look at me when I tuck and I acknowledge. I say, Mama King. I say, Shomas King. That means my grandmother Earth, my mother Earth. So yes, there was a Earth before this Earth. We just didn't get here. Something went on. That we got way over here in the United States, or what's called Turtle Island. And they say Turtle Island. I seen a picture on Facebook, another on one of the websites, and they traced it out. And one of them had their little, I'd call it a little magic pen. And so they use their little magic pen and trace it out all the way from the, you know, the North Pole all the way down to the South America.
Mm-hmm.
They trace it out and looks like a big turtle. So that's one myth or legend. And they say, what is, and this we call it a myths and legends. In any way we choose to believe.
Right. I'm very fascinated with what you've been talking about.
Get back to what you asked. What got me on the road was, even in a facility that I went to prison for in 1983, when that old man come in there, he told me about a dream I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I never told nobody about that dream. But yet it was, you know, he'd step in front of everybody and told everything I did. He told about that dream. He looked right at me. I'm still sat there quiet and listened. And that also caught my attention. And I said, well, I just thought it was some old guy come in and want to preach to us, because that's what we're used to.
Mm-hmm.
Been in a different home where we had to do that. We had to do that to get clothes on our back, to eat in their homes and things like that. That's the lifestyle and the ways I grew up. So I said, hey, he's just another old guy that don't know what he's talking about. But anyway, well, he chuckles, and I got to know him, and I got to talk to him at some year, age of 22. You know, he's asking me, why are you laughing at the old man? I said, well, because he said something funny. But he always has his stories and parables that he'd tell us. He'd talk in Indian, but you know, we all couldn't talk the language, so he'd translate them in English for us so we can understand them in better ways. And they all had the stories, the childhood stories, you know, about different characters, different tribes, every tribe and nationality in the United States and Turtle Island. They just got different interpretations for them. You always talk about Winnebuzu. You know, Winnebuzu as a trickster.
Mm-hmm.
He was quite the character, always getting into stuff. They're good stories, and we find out, you know, at that age, he always encouraged. And he said, he told me, if we get to know him, started, you know, crawling in a sweat lodge.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a way that I felt comfortable believing. And he told me, he said, well, that's when he talked about that book of history. He said, I've read that book of history. He said, my grandkids bring it to me. He says, Grandpa, there's also this book we read. And so we read it, and it makes a lot of sense. And I said, yeah, stations. I said, went way back to that. After I studied it and found out there, people look at you like you're kind of crazy or something because you want to know more about religious practices. I said, well, then there's a concordance. You want to be pacific. I said, every pastor, preacher has one in his office. It's like a dictionary to the Bible. That's what they go by.
Mm.
And they do up their sermons or whatever comes to them from above.
Mm.
Whatever messages they're ready to talk to their people about the next week. They sit and think about it. Same and similar. So I said, well, he told me, he said, yeah, he said, I, you know, he said, that book makes a lot of sense to me. even at my age, you know, if he was 80 years old when I first met him, so that probably went back, he probably was born in the turn of the century, 1900s, and he'd learned from his grandfathers and mothers, and they were probably in the 1830s, if they're, you know, just maybe had longer lifespans, so they endured more, survived more. And that's how they grew up back then. He said, that book makes a lot of sense to me, he said, because remember that one part in there? He said, wait, talk about that, the big tower, he said. He said, I don't remember the name of that big tower, but all them people were trying to build that tower and so they could get high up and talk to God. He said, the creator. And he come down. I said, yeah, he come down. Like he waved his magic wand and give everybody their own language and ways that they couldn't communicate. And they figured they're wasting a lot of time and energy trying to build that big tower. And they didn't need to build that big tower to get way up. Probably quite the tower back in the day. But they didn't have to go have the big towers to get closer to God. They can go anywhere.
Yeah.
Talk to your creator, in your bathroom, go outside, wherever you want to have a moment of silence. Driving in your car. Nowadays, these are all tools we use. And the technology, and he said, even in to see him change his viewpoints, and I'm always blessed to be around him from 83 to 92. Some people seen him as a strict, mean old man. But I said, that's not the same one we knew. I said, every time he come seen us, he was a kind and caring man.
Yeah.
He didn't turn nobody away. Even in there. And I said, a lot of us, he touched a lot of people's lives in his 50 years of his journey and kind of set the criteria. So I said, when you go to, I said, our Svetlana, did you start our former church? He set the criteria. And even in there, he said, I don't want them drinking that day. I don't want them smoking weed that day. That's what I want. I want everybody down here, anybody. He didn't ask them if they're Indian or not. He said, anybody that wants to come down here, and they're sweat. Experience. He said, I want them down here. And he said, well, then there would be always conflict wherever you're at. I said, well, this one don't have a tribal ID. He said, is he Indian? He said, well, have his grandma write me a letter. So we'd wait, mail service, write a letter. But I still want him down here till they find out that suppress the conflict, the inner conflict that we were having on there. And you find out, his grandma was Indian. He said, that's something just the government and things put us there and give us a number to keep track of us and say we're Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what reminds, I found a place that was comfortable. I felt it, in a sweat lodge and listening to that old man. Because he never turned nobody away, no matter what crime we had. He'd want them down there to show them a way. We already messed up. Back in them days, putting it bluntly, we was already bottom of the barrel. If we was, the technical terms, apples, we were already bottom of the barrels. So we had nothing to lose by trying to grasp away the beliefs. And that one way of believing is, that was 40 years ago. And today, a lot of them and people, they've seen, even non-Indians that come down there over the years. Now, they achieved the Red Road, sobriety, sober Indians, now they're programs. They went to school for it. Some are under the UNICAM, Indian counselors. Some progressed and went to college and took college courses so they could get, you know, better pay grade to help their families out. Nicer cars. And they've been working them for, you know, 10, 15 years already. And some of us got a pipe. And I said, that pipe, I give it to some of them straight. It's like I was told and they were told, you know, that Bible's not going to keep you straight.
Yeah.
Feather's not going to keep you sober. That pipe is not going to keep you sober. So get, you know, what's going to keep you sober?
You are.
Yep. And the last gentleman come down from our area, he come from Canada, and he knew his, he chose to do his last few years or coming down. And he didn't have to. He'd probably come down to that area in Cache Lake and Red Lake and up north up there for the last 30, 40 years too. He chose to come down and do ceremonies, preach, pass the word of what, how he was brought up. And even at the time, I got to know him. First time I seen him was Richard Morrison. And the first time I seen him was in 1990, somewhere in there. Right about the time my parents passed. And then I got to know him. I go to ceremonies and here and there and through the self-help programs, the cultural-based programs they have on the, they used to call them reservations and now we call them nations.
Mm-hmm.
And but he'd come talk to us and he said, you know, talk freely. He'd open up. Even he said, it's not only women that are survivors of sexual abuse. There's men that are survivors of sexual abuse. As the one we're able to talk about that, the things, then the healing begins.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about the good and the bad of everything. And he chose to, with the love and the forgiveness part of the seven teachings, too. And I get a lot of, well, you don't know what you're talking about. I get a lot. I said, well, yeah, I used to a lot, too. But as you get older, you find out. When we close our minds to a different religion, a different belief, or what they choose to believe in, then we close our minds. For that minute, hour, whatever, we're unable to meet. You're not teachable.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be taught nothing. Because you just closed your mind. You lost respect. You know, one of the seven teachings is respect.
Yeah.
You know, it says respect is given. So you just lost respect to the other man, the woman's way to believe, what do they choose to believe in? So you just close your mind and then you're unteachable. The brain won't allow you to take in because a lot of it's same and similar, your historical trauma,
mm-hmm.
the things that are forced on us. Our grandfathers and mothers, all the way down through history, every nationality and race. And it's just something we can sit there and debate all day. You know, a black person come to me one time and says, well, we were enslaved. And I said, no, we were enslaved too. Every nationality and race was enslaved. They're just the most recent and the most publicized one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's no excuse either. It wasn't my fault that herein you can debate, but then you can sit down and talk with that same person and find out what they're about, what their beliefs are,
yeah.
even in their own struggles, what they had to grow up with in the street life, as they say. Same wherever you go. same struggles. There's more people when you get in bigger towns. There's more people.
Mm-hmm.
So the same things.
Right. We're down to the last 14 minutes of the show.
Okay.
So I wanted to know if there was anything that you wanted to put out there link-wise. Did you want to say anything about Sober Indians support group that
it's good to have everybody. I breezed through there, and I'll throw a bunch of invitations out there, whether it's Elders Meditation, Sober Indians. I get on there and throw a bunch of, or go through there and put a bunch of invitations out. So I'm sitting here visiting, and I have nothing better to do. That's what I say. I saw a bunch of invitations. Then I look back again a few days, and somebody might, say they accepted your invitation. Get on their website. So with all the social distancing, so they don't need to drive 100 miles or drive 10 miles or go to a meeting. They can get on one of them websites and zoom it in.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of younger people, they come and talk or get-togethers. We have get-togethers, and I said, the sad part of it is people say it's sad, it's a tragedy, but the effects of the suicide rate, it didn't just start, it started in the 80s, and it just was like suicides and ODs of the hopelessness, and I said, that's why these programs are all designed. So we don't have to suffer it out alone.
Mm-hmm.
We're just there to help. A lot of people do a lot of things in their own time. They don't work for a program. They still get out there and they leave their number open.
Mm-hmm.
Set up their own little chat groups and support groups that. A lot of them are happy to answer their phone 24/7. And listen to what other people have to say in them moments of hopelessness. And it touches our lives. It breaks the heart when it becomes one of your own family members. Or...
Yeah, that's true. It's Sober Indians, the group, our online support group is, I see a lot of love and support there. And I think that's really great that it's like that 73,000 plus members, which is amazing.
I give a couple on there. I know they keep it real, too. They won't,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes they won't candy coat in some of their replies. They tell them, well, get back up. Don't stay there. They won't candy coat their replies sometimes. They say, congratulations on your one day. Congratulations on your 2 days and your addictions. There's another self-help. One of my sponsors, we even took me to Gamblers Anonymous at the time, 7 years ago. I said, well, what do I want to go there for? I said, same and similar. He said, you go in there, listen, and say, yep. Get the same results. Just a different addiction if we choose to do too much of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't the same results. The same emotional distress. And people lost their houses, everything, their jobs. Same thing as, but for myself, last time, or it wasn't the first time, my health conditions. So you get to a point of drinking and drugging and abusing your body with every chemical in the world that you think you can get high off from, your body's not going to hold up no more. In my situation, my liver was gone, and I knew that years ago. So you try it again. Be a knucklehead. Try it again. Get the same results. But I'm just going to tell people that don't know me up north or my friends and family up there that are supportive. I'm grateful for the friends and family I have to try to be supportive. But still come got me when they knew I quit drinking and was at a halfway house again. And I'm also thankful for the friends and family that are still actively using and stay away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all part of it, too. Because, you know, the old man, he told a story about little crabs, lobsters, how they like to they drag each other down. I said, yeah. There's other, one of my good sponsors, George Douglas Sr., he come and beat me the last 7 years, too. I've told that story a lot, too. I said, yeah, but it, the time I heard it was 1983, I thought it was pretty funny. The family members, and I come to you, lady has got down, and we allowed it to happen, so. And it's all part of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I just chose to sober up again. For the people that knew me and the friends that know my health conditions, now it comes a point your life depends on it. How you want to spend the rest of your life. So I said, I don't got much. I'm never going to have much. I'm going to waste a lot of it. Even other things, negative things. So I choose to, I learned how to make a pipe, learned how to use, make wood pipes doing. Used to do beadwork, learned how to work with some leather. And I told my buddy today, I said, well, I still ain't too good on making a hand drum. I said, well, keep trying. That's what counts.
Right.
But I said, they find out. You do all the positive things and try to do that. You ain't got time to drink and drug. Unless you choose to, you got too much idle time. Then it becomes boredom. Out of it's old grief issues. And I said, we're always going to have grief issues. They're going to keep reoccurring the rest of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to find somebody we trust, understands us, that we can talk to them about. And I'm just fortunate that I got a few good friends that they let me vent. And I said, don't worry about it. When they vent, someone vents, don't worry about it. I've had a lot of friends the last 10 years that I've vented.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to cry. That's all a part of healing. So you got to start loving ourselves. In order to have that, you know, that get another day in. I said, when I was asked to do the show, I said, well, these are how many attempts. But in reality, I said, we only have today. There's no guarantees.
Right.
There's no guarantee you're going to wake up in the morning. There's no guarantees there's going to be a tomorrow. Well, you have the day. And I said, how? Then them days add up. Sometimes them days add up into years. They're not all people that work, you know, in the field, mental health and things like that. They're not all self, you know, the program workers, they're bankers and everything, jobs too. I tell them I get humble and they know me and I said, you know, it's hard to say, hardest thing in the world. We think we're weak. We want to reach out and ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people are going to misinterpret being humble as a weakness because he's showing his weakness. That's his supposed, you know. I said, no, you're just asking for help because they're sick and tired of the life they're living. It's not getting them nowhere. It's the hardest thing in the world to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
All the help is right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's on every street corner is in the United States. There's some facility, there's some organization in a big town. You're going to have a meeting. There's a church. There's some place of worship that's going to be there and going to welcome you in and try to get you on the right road, a right path that's for you and your community.
I have one more question. If you have, if you had someone come up to you and they were reaching out for help, but they were scared, what would you say to them to encourage them to seek the help that they need for the addiction that they were suffering with?
Put a point in the right direction. You know, if I couldn't help them or I was unable to, if it was true, sometimes you can't, your own relatives won't listen to you, so you say, go to this person, go to that person. There's a program there, there's a Zoom meeting. Because I did a talk show not a few years ago, and I spoke freely, and she must have thought it was okay. She didn't edit it because it went out on the airwaves. And I didn't put a nationality, I didn't put a religion on there. I said, a real spiritual elder, when you come back from prison, is going to point you in the right direction to get a self-help program. I didn't put, it was just on an Indian station, it was an Indian topic, but a real spiritual elder is going to point you in the right direction to find some help. And I said, if they're not, they want to criticize, cut you down, then they're just an old man or an old lady with gray hair. And it's a point blank way of things to put things. And I got looked at in the community after that hit the airwaves too. But yet all them same people, when they found out I was drinking again, the ones that are true to their beliefs and what they're represented for the last 15, 20, 30, 40 years, 45, 50 years of their sobriety, achieving, they were still there to help.
Right.
And we're working on the next generation, as I hear the president say today. So it's I tell some people what we're doing today, it may not seem like much, but our grandkids might see the benefit of it. That's how long progress is.
Mm-hmm.
That's how long progress takes.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Very true. Well,
if someone comes to me, I'll try to point them in the right direction.
Right.
And if I know the person I send them to, and I try to text them or call them and say they're genuine, they need some help.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I think that's good advice.
Okay. Sorry to offend anybody with anything I said. Mm-hmm. I hope I didn't. But.
No, absolutely not. I think everybody that is listening and is taking to heart what you're saying. You have given and talked about a lot of very good points throughout the entire show, and I wanted to thank you for coming on tonight.
It's been very informative. You and Pat for inviting me.
Another
thing you say, as long as one word, you know, somebody can use one word out of this whole hour, it might help them out in a crucial moment. You never know.
Exactly. And that's the goal.
Yep.
You know, to let everybody know that there is help out there. All you have to do is just reach out for it. Someone's always there to help. But anyway, I wanted to thank you, and you have an amazing night. Thank you for everyone.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. Yep. See y'all next week.
Yep.